You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 3rd of August, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today we are going to continue with the beginner's guide that I began yesterday, and I did say yesterday I'm sure that I will just race through something and forget to explain it, and I did right at the very beginning when I was talking about the word nationalist, and I jumped straight to ethnos. And the word nationalist actually comes from the word natal, which means birth. That's why a nation is a group of people that are united through birth. They're not united through where they are born, they're actually united through birth. So they're all an extended family, basically. And that is what nations always meant in the past. That's what the word nation means when you find it in the Bible. It's all talking about the descendants of one particular person who was the father of the nation. In Britain, you could say that our father of the nation was Brutus, the Trojan prince that came to the island when the island was still called Albion, conquered the island. He was the king, and he gave rise to a line of kings that went right the way through to the Roman stage, and they were deposed by the Anglo-Saxons. And then when Edward Longshanks came to the throne, he was basically taking on that right that Brutus had, because Brutus was the king of the whole island, and he united Cornwall, Logria, Cambria, and Albany, as the four home nations were known by at that time. Edward Longshanks did the same, and he united England, Scotland, and Wales. So he was effectively reviving the sovereignty of the island when he did that. And that's actually where the term British comes from. It comes from Brutus. It means to look like Brutus. Of course, the word Jewish means to look like a Jew. The word British means to look like Brutus. And Brutus was a Trojan prince. His grandfather also gave rise to the Roman Empire because he married the daughter of King Latinus, which is where we get Latin from. And basically all these peoples are connected up. And this is where we originally get these terms from. It's very important to look at the origin of words. And that's how we can show that to be a nationalist means to identify with your nation, and a nation is a group of people that are united by birth. To claim that a nation is a group of citizens that all have a piece of paper saying that they belong together, which is effectively like saying that having a shared ideology is more of a bond than your family bond. I mean, this is the reason why people went to war in the First World War and the Second World War, is because they were defending their extended kinship group. They weren't going to war because they were paid to. They weren't going to war because they were trying to defend some kind of ideology. They were going to war because they believed that their extended kinship group was under threat. And that's why they were willing to lay down their life for them. Evolutionary science tells us that people are willing to lay down their lives for those who are not directly related to them, but still related to them in some way, because they know that if they do lay down their life, their genes will still continue on, because they know that their nation contains a certain large amount of the same genes that they do. And that's the theory as to why people will lay down their lives for others. And of course, laying down your life for others is a Christian concept. We're taught as Christians to love your neighbour as yourself, and that means to put the common good before the individual good. And you can look at that and you can say, well, that is basically nationalism, isn't it? Nationalism is the political expression of the top Christian commandment, which is to love your neighbour as yourself. And we did do a four-part series looking at the Sermon on the Mount. We went right through the whole chapter, myself and a trainee priest called Florian Geyer, and we went through the whole sermon showing how it was basically instructions on how to be a good nationalist. You forgive your enemies, you love your enemies, and what that means is you understand that whoever it is that you are arguing with, he is really your brother. He is part of your extended kinship group, and it is better to forgive him than to come to blows with him. And when you come to blows with your extended kinship group, we end up with things like civil war, we end up with all sorts of problems, and outsiders will then take advantage of the fact that you are fighting amongst yourselves in order to back one side over the other, or to even take over the country whilst you are fighting amongst yourselves. It is not good to do that. Also, a part of Christianity is obviously charity to one another. And that is basically positive ethnocentrism, which is what we're trying to promote at Radio Albion. There are two types of ethnocentrism, and ethnocentrism clearly means centered on ethnicity. And you could say that as nationalists, we are ethnocentrics. I quite like that word because it is quite an eccentric way to be, I guess. And you can cross that with the term ethnos, so you get ethnocentric. You get positive ethnocentrism, which is showing charity towards the in-group. And you get negative ethnocentrism, which is treating outsiders harshly. And computer models predict that the group which shows the highest positive ethnocentrism and the highest negative ethnocentrism will win in the competition against all the other groups. And what we suggest here at Radio Albion is, because we are still the majority in our countries, we're about 85% white, I think, in Britain, and 15% non-white, we don't actually need to treat the outsiders harshly. All we have to do is be charitable to our own, and we should win the competition just because we are starting out with such large numbers. So this is what we try to promote here at Radio Albion, is doing your best for your people. And all of us here, all the hosts, do what we do voluntarily. We would still be doing this even if we didn't get any donations at all. We would still be doing this. It is done out of a sense of duty to our people. It's done out of a love for our people and an understanding that we have a gift. We're very blessed in that we have the time to do the research, and we're very blessed in that we are capable of breaking things down into more easily understandable blocks that people can understand. Because when you're listening to academics, it can be very difficult to understand what they're saying. And I would hope that the hosts that we have here at Radio Albion are capable of simplifying things and putting it in terms that the average man or woman can understand. We have all sorts of different people involved in nationalism. We go all the way from football fans all the way up to top academics and professors. And we try to provide content for everybody here at Radio Albion. In fact, we didn't used to put doctor or professor before people's names so that there was a sense of equality on the site. But I've now started to do that just to pay respect to these people, and also to show that the academic interest in the site and the fact that we provide a platform for these academics that they are denied elsewhere. People get deplatformed in universities now if they're studying something that is not politically correct. And these academics, particularly Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, I mean, he lives a very frugal life, and yet he devotes all his time to his research. There is a lot of books that are published only in Russian, and he has translated them into English, and then he analyzes them. and he has a lot of students, basically. Students that listen to the Orthodox Nationalist and that check out Radio Albion. And of course, also he does a show with me on Thursdays where we look at geopolitical happenings. So we have our geopolitical analysis here. And it's all done out of a sense of duty. It's all done voluntarily. And we believe this is a good example to set for our people. I mean, one of the great things about nationalism over the last 10, 15 years is that with the advent of the internet, we've been able to produce our own media. Because the problem that we've had in the past has always been misrepresentation by the mainstream media. They will smear us, they will slander us, they will cherry pick things that have been said to only pick things that reflect badly on us. In actual fact, in the National Union of Journalists guidelines, it says that they must never portray the so-called far right in a positive light. They must never allow the so-called far right to actually explain their talking points. The only things that must be said about them must be negative things. So until we had the internet, we had no real way of explaining what we are talking about and what we are really about. Now we have the internet, we're able to show how creative we are, and we have fantastic content producers, we have fantastic musicians, animators, talk show hosts, just the creativity amongst our movement always amazes me, and the quality of it as well. It is so professional. And we do this, out of a sense of duty to our people, out of a sense of love to our people. And we're also about constantly improving. We want to be the best people that we can be because we believe that we should show by example. It's no good just talking about things and saying, well, you should do this and you should do that, if you're not leading by example. And I think the greatest example of the self-improvement that comes through nationalism is really just to look at the Radio Albion site. If you compare the sort of things that we were doing 4 or 5 years ago to the sort of things that we're doing now, I mean, there's been an incredible improvement and professionalization and attention to detail. We've got so much better at what we are doing now. We are concentrated on things. We have scripts and notes prepared before we do a podcast. It's not like we're just two or three people chatting away and complaining about the situation. We try to give an informed analysis of what is going on and how it's going to affect the indigenous peoples of Europe. That's what we're all about. So I think we set a good example with this improvement. We did once have a co-host who did not set a good example. He talked a good talk. He really did talk a good talk, and he seemed genuine, but then his actions let us all down. I'm referring to Matthew Heimbach there, who portrayed a very moral image of himself and then got caught doing some very immoral things. So he was no longer with us as soon as that happened, of course. And again, that's an example of how difficult it is to actually come up to these standards. But if you can come up to the very best standards that you can hold yourself to, then you're setting a good example for others, and others will see the way that you are. They will see that you are charitable, that you are courteous, that you are honourable. And then when you tell them, well, I'm also a nationalist, they're going to think, well, hang on a minute, what is this nationalism? This sounds like a good thing. And that's the best advert we can have for nationalism. Now, when we started out with the radio, that was all we had. We were making podcasts. We wanted to give something back because all of us were big fans of listening to podcasts. And once we got a sizable audience together, we were thinking, well, what can we do with this? How can we capitalize on this audience? Surely there must be resources there. How can we put people in touch with one another? And we set up a chat room so that people could talk to one another so that they didn't feel as if they were on their own. Because a lot of the time, nationalists can be ostracized by family or friends. They can feel that nobody else in the world sees things the way that they do. So we set up a chat room, and we got a community going on there, an internet community going on there. And then I got in touch with Mark Collette, And he was thinking along the same lines and thinking, well, how can I capitalize on this audience? Because he had a very large audience. And he was wanting to take things the next step and set up an organization that was based on positive ethnocentrism, based on being charitable to our own people and doing things in a different way to how nationalists have carried on before. In the past, nationalists have had demonstrations. They may have been spoken harshly about the newcomers to our nations. And now we want to concentrate on positive ethnocentrism, doing good things for our people and setting a good example. And I believe that is what the organization that Mark Collette formed, Patriotic Alternative, that's what it does. It does litter picking, monument cleaning, help for the homeless, gets people out from the cities into our beautiful countryside to show them just how lucky they are to live in Britain, because it is the most beautiful country in the world. We love our country just as much as we love our people. And that's because it was created by our people. The whole of the countryside was shaped by our ancestors. It may look as if it's just completely natural, but it's all stone walling, it's all enclosures, it's all carefully planted trees. And the reason why it looks so beautiful is because our ancestors put their heart and their soul into it. In actual fact, this project, the Radio Albion project, I put my heart and my soul into this. And this is my life's work, basically. Everything I do is concentrated on making Radio Albion better and hopefully improving people's lives. And I do get contacted by people that say that we've been a great help to them. We get people that listen to us that say, it's great, I can listen to your shows with my family. I know there's not going to be any swearing on there. I know it's going to be positive things that are talked about. And this is the way that we want to be seen. We want to be helping people. And this all ties in with this Christian ethos. As I say, the Christian ethos is the nationalist ethos. Now, when we started out, we were really followers rather than influencers, and we were using the terminology that had been used for years. We were just sort of feeling our way, not really knowing the cause of the things that were going on around us. And as we got more confident, we started changing the terminology to the way that we want to talk about things, and we started trying to influence people in a positive way. And we were thinking, well, what are the solutions to the situation that we are in? How can we improve our situation? And we thought, well, you can improve your situation by giving up pornography. You can improve a situation by giving up drugs, giving up alcohol, giving up all these temptations that are placed before us in the 21st century. And then you can start building communities with like-minded people. And then when others want to give up drugs or give up gambling or give up bad habits, then they can join our community and know that they won't find those bad habits there. And the more people that do that, the more people will see that we have a positive community here, and the more people will want to join. I mean, what we effectively really need to have in the end is an advocacy organization. Like, all the different minorities have their own advocacy organizations. You will have gay rights advocacy organizations, you will have black and minority ethnic advocacy organizations, Jewish advocacy organizations. There are no indigenous British advocacy organizations. There are no white advocacy organizations, because whenever somebody tries to form one, they get accused of being a white supremacist, they get accused of being racist and all the rest of it. And what is the end result of that? Well, the end result of it is that we don't have legitimate communities, and our white working class children get left behind, and the government end up saying, we need community organizations for these people. We need to find some way of giving these young people a stake in society. We need to give them a sense of hope. And of course, we're standing there saying, well, this is what we are doing. This is what Radio Albion is doing. This is what Patriotic Alternative are doing. We are trying to give young people a sense of hope, young white people, and to tell them that they do have a stake in society and they can change the world for the better. And the way that you do that is by changing yourself for the better at first. And yet, what sort of thanks do we get for it? Patriotic Alternative get constantly attacked in the media. So these are the sort of things that we are up against. But we will get there in the end. I'm sure we will get there in the end. If we're going to have multicultural countries, which we basically set up for ourselves by inviting these other peoples into our country, eventually we are going to have a group that represents white people that looks at policies and how these policies are going to affect the Indigenous Britons. The same as these other advocacy groups look at government policies and they say, well, this policy is not going to be very good for black and minority ethnics because black and minority ethnics have a fear of going to hospitals, so they're not going to get vaccinated, say. I mean, that's something that one of these groups might say. We need to have a group like that that looks at policies and says, well, this government policy of opening up immigration and making it easier to come into Britain through this, the changing of the visas and lowering the points that are needed for people to come in and widening the number of countries to allow people to come in, this is going to negatively impact the Indigenous Britons. And we need groups that can actually do that. And because we get all these attacks in the press, it's very difficult for us to get funding to do these things. Everybody in nationalism does what he does out of a love for his people. Nobody does it for the money that they're going to earn, because you just don't earn any money doing this. Now, some of the terminology that we used to use, we certainly don't use it anymore. One of the things we used to use was the term race war. And this was basically a holdover from the way people had talked in earlier nationalism. And when we were talking about race war, it was mainly in reference to the number of people that have been injured or killed since the advent of multiculturalism. And you can see that in the multicultural centres, the places that are at least 60% non-white, there is a massive crime rate there, and there are a lot of people being hurt. And we don't wish for that to happen. We don't wish for anybody to get hurt. And we suggest that if people were living separately, which is what a lot of these black advocacy organizations are pushing for, they say they want black teachers, they want black judges, they want black police, we'll give them their entire black area and let whites have their white area. And then there would be no racism, would there? This is the sort of thing that we advocate for, which I don't believe is racist, because it's trying to do away with racism. But this term race war was referring to the number of victims and the number of dead, and suggesting that the figures are almost as bad as if we were in a war. And there are doctors that have said that the sort of injuries that they're now seeing in London are more reminiscent of a war zone than they are from a city, because you've got people that are being attacked with machetes and acid attacks and all these terrible things. That's what is being referred to there. It is not being referred to say that white people should fight back, because we have always, right from the very start at Radio Albion, made a point of condemning all violence. In actual fact, we spent 5, 6, 7 years maybe doing a series called Truth Without Radio. And in that series, we looked at all the revolutions, and all the revolutions that have involved bloodletting have ended up with the Indigenous people worse off. You can look at the Communist Revolution, you can look at the Mexican Revolution, you can look at the French Revolution. All of these revolutions have ended up with the Indigenous people worse off, and that is the message that we have put across. We have a quote from Jared Taylor that's been on the site for a very long time. And when I heard it, I thought, this is fantastic. This is exactly what we want. And the quote is, if we have no peaceful solution, we have no solution. And that is very true. And that's what we showed in Truth Without Radio. We showed that all of these revolutions that had involved bloodletting ended up with the people worse off. Now, there were two revolutions which did not involve bloodletting. And that one of those is the Green Revolution of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya. Nobody lost their lives in the Green Revolution, and Libya was turned into the Switzerland of Africa. It had a health service, it had free houses for people when they got married, It had free education. If anybody was bright enough to be able to go to university, it was paid for them to go to university in Europe. If they were female, it was paid for them to have a male chaperone with them, a brother that went with them. Gaddafi really did look after his people, and that revolution came about without one shot being fired. Another revolution that happened without a shot being fired was the National Socialist Revolution in Germany. And if you're new to this, you may not know this, but the National Socialists were voted into power. They tried to have what is called a push, the beer hall push, some years before, which was trying to use force to change what was going on in the government, and it ended up failing. Adolf Hitler ended up being jailed, and that's when he wrote his Mein Kampf. And when he came out, he decided that it had to be done legally, it had to be done through the ballot box. So they worked very hard at converting the people to National Socialism, as it was back then. National Socialism wasn't perfect. We have criticized that. I have my own critiques of it, which you'll find in the Truthful Out radio series. But once they had got voted in and they changed things, life became better for the German indigenous peoples. We had what was known as Germany's economic miracle, and Hitler was made Man of the Year in Time magazine, and all over the world people were saying, well, this is just incredible what's gone on here. He's managed to get 6 million people that were out of work into work. And this was done without a bloody revolution or anything like that. This was done peacefully. And of course, people will complain and they'll say, oh, yes, well, the Jews weren't treated very well when that happened. But that's a separate issue. What I'm talking about here is if you have a bloody revolution and you have violence involved, you are going to be worse off. So when we are talking about, or when we were talking about race war back then, we were referring to the number of people hurt. And we were not suggesting that white people should stand up and violently attack blacks or anything like that. We were simply referring to the numbers of injured and dead since we have had multiculturalism. And of course, multiculturalism means that there is going to be friction between the peoples that live together. And this was found in a great big study that was actually done on diversity to see whether diversity had positive effect or negative effect. It was sponsored by the UN some years back. And the study creators were very left-wing and very progressive. And the results they found of that study was that multiculturalism is not conducive for communities. It means that people will hunker down behind their television sets. They won't have a sense of community. They won't have a sense of trusting their neighbors. Even if crime doesn't actually go up, they will have a much greater fear of crime happening. And this is because you don't understand the body language, you don't understand the language, and because when we are around other ethnicities, our bodies don't actually produce oxytocin, and we need oxytocin to bond with other people. It's actually the hormone that is produced when the babe is suckling on the mother, and the mother produces oxytocin, and it produces a sense of bonding between the mother and the child. And also, when one particular ethnicity is around its own ethnicity, we produce this hormone. Males produce it as well as females, and it is conducive to social bonding. If you are around members of another ethnicity, you don't produce this hormone. You're not actually producing the substances that your body needs in order to form a community. So multiculturalism is not conducive right at the biological level, right at the level of your hormones. It is not conducive to well-being. So you're bound to get friction when you have communities all living together within one territory. This is why it didn't happen years ago, because, and also when you actually look into it, you'll see that most of the wars have started like that. Most wars have actually started with two different ethnicities or more living within one territory, and they're not going to war over that territory. All you have to do is look at the Balkans. And I mean, even in the Balkans, you've got groups of people that are actually biologically very, very like one another, but they have different languages, they have different cultures, and even that is enough to set them off at war against one another. Look at over here in Britain, where we had Ireland at war against England. And these are peoples that are very close to one another, that just have superficial differences, which is just language. When you're talking about peoples that are very different to one another biologically, it's a recipe for further problems down the line. This brings me to another point here. I also talk about subspecies, and obviously what I'm talking about there is subspecies of human. A subspecies of human is just another way to describe races. You get different subspecies of whales. You get blue whales, you get orca whales, you get humpback whales, you get beluga whales, and they are all subspecies of whales. Whales is the actual species, and the subspecies are the different types of whales. You get the same with bears, and you get the same with humans. Humans are the species, and the different subspecies of human are the different races. And you can break the races down into their separate ethnicities as well. And that's really the wonderful diversity that the world is full of, that we seek to preserve as nationalists. Our opponents will say diversity is a strength, and then rather than actually promoting diversity, they will be promoting the loss of diversity. They will be promoting the different peoples interbreeding with one another, so they lose all that diversity. Once two races interbreed together, the offspring is then neither race. It's a mixed race, and eventually those mixed races, if there's enough of them, they may form a clyne, which is a stable mixed race, basically. But it means that all the original two races have been lost, and in its place, you've just got one clyne, and that clyne will not have the unique abilities of that original race. It's the same with when you look at pedigrees. If you have pedigree horses, or you have pedigree dogs, and if they interbreed with a different type of pedigree, say if you have a racehorse and a racehorse interbreeds with a pack horse, you're never going to be able to get a racehorse or a pack horse out of the descendants again. And the horse that is the offspring will neither be a racehorse nor a pack horse. It will be wanting to gallop fast, but it won't be able to. It will be wanting to carry heavy weights, but it won't be able to. It will be confused. It will have two conflicting ideas in its mind, and you can extrapolate from that to what it must be like for people that are born mixed race. They're going to have two conflicting racial souls living within one body. It's going to be very difficult for them. And I have had mixed race people write to me and say that I'm one of the few people that really understands the sort of problems that they end up going through in life. And of course, this is why we try to promote the idea that people should stick within their own race. And that's also the Christian idea. The first verse that talks about marriage in the Bible, it says, bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. So it means marriage should be between people of the same flesh colour and of the same bone structure. It's obvious, because then you will have children that look like the parents, and whatever particular type that is, it will then carry on into the future. And this is what we are about here at Radio Albion, is preserving what we have and not destroying it. We don't want to destroy the diversity in the world. We want to preserve the diversity in the world. And the way to do that is to keep the races, keep the peoples separate. Perhaps tomorrow I'll go into some of the ways that we propose that this can be done, because, of course, we're not proposing it be done violently in any way. We propose that we have a voluntary system of repatriation, and perhaps I'll get into that tomorrow anyway. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the Nationalist Community.